Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Anne Baldwin.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome again to another edition of The Connection. I am one of the hosts of this program, Anne Baldwin, and Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, who is the CEO of The Connection, is taking a little bit of time off, but of course she's listening. She's doing what she's got to do, but we all need a little bit of time off. Trust me. You know, it's never a good time. It's never convenient. You know, it's just, people keep asking me to do things. There's other things I should be doing. But I say, you know what? For my mental health and to be more effective at the job that I do and running my business, hell yeah, we need to take vacation. So anyway, that's my little editorial comment for this morning. Hope everyone's doing well. We've got a great program here. We're talking about Narcan. You know, we've got a real crisis. Well, we've got a lot of them here in Connecticut, but we're going to zoom in on this one today. And we've got Dr. Kathleen Savino with us. She is the Chief Program Officer for The Connection. We're going to get a little bit of insight from her. And also one of my favorite people, John Ryan, who has had a sleepless night. We'll talk about that because he is a EMT, an emergency medical technician with Glastonbury EMS, who does a fantastic job in their community serving the folks. And so we talk about nonprofits. We talk about people with their passion to help people just because they want to. That's a big piece of what you do, right, John?
Absolutely.
Welcome. Thanks
Absolutely.
For coming in.
Thank you. My pleasure. That's exactly what I do. I volunteer. It's what keeps me sane from my real job.
It's unbelievable because, you know, I've been down there. I've seen what you and all the other men and women of Glastonbury EMS do. And, you know, it's kind of like you're just always on standby waiting for those bells and tones to go off. And you never know, you know, what you're going to get when you go out there.
Absolutely. The upside is you get to watch a lot of really bad TV. But you
what's
know,
your favorite bad TV program?
Oh, well, this morning, Godzilla versus Destroyer. It was great. Absolutely wonderful.
Black and white?
No. Color. It's a 1993 movie. It was terrible.
But you got to do what you got to do.
For an hour and 40 minutes, I didn't have to think. And that was great.
There you go. Well, I really respect what you do. And one of the reasons that we want to have you on and also Kathy Savino is to talk about this Narcan situation and what we're up against. And we saw you on the news before, you know, talking about the EpiPen. So if people have an allergic reaction, it could be a bee sting, it could be peanut butter, it could be anything. You know, EpiPens need to be available and save lives. And what happened is the price of that skyrocketed. And now here we are talking about Narcan so that people who are overdosing, their lives can be saved with Narcan. And what's happened to that now? It's skyrocketed.
We were paying $38 a dose. Now we're paying $90. That's going to be tough. Last year, the governor signed the act concerning opioids and access to overdose reversal drugs, which basically states all first responders in the state carry it. So that means police, fire, EMS, everybody has to carry it. Approximately two people a day in Connecticut die from an overdose. Last year there was 917 people, up 25% from the year before, who died from opioid overdoses. Now that's mostly heroin with fentanyl catching up real fast. Fentanyl was about 450 deaths. Heroin was about 550. 500, let's say. But it's amazing.
Here in Connecticut.
Here in Connecticut, just Connecticut.
Wow. Well, let's bring in Dr. Savino too, because let's talk about that. You know, on behalf of, you know, a lot of the programs that you see and that you oversee at the Connection, you know, it is a real growing concern and a growing factor. To me, I mean, that's the bad news. The good news is that there is a remedy for that, and that is Narcan. And so just talk a little bit about some of the patients that you see and some of the programs that you have at the Connection and where this is an issue.
Well, we work with a very vulnerable population. We have several substance abuse treatment programs. So we have programs that work with individuals who are returning from incarceration, many who have substance use disorders. We work with people with significant mental illness, so really homeless individuals. And so really across our services, we are seeing people who are struggling with opiate addiction. I think what's really important to note, though, is that those sort of high-risk populations that I just mentioned that we work with, those are not the only folks who are being impacted by this epidemic. We're seeing more and more, it's the kid next door. We're seeing people who, there was just a show on, you know, about athletes who, you know, high school athletes who had an injury, they were on painkillers, and the next thing you know, yep, they're in full-blown opiate addiction. And so, you know, we have foster care programs, and we're dealing with this in our foster care program. So programs that people didn't really think that we would be experiencing opioid issues and overdoses, we are. And all of our staff in our programs, we also are equipped with Narcan as well. Because we know that timeliness is a factor in reversing an overdose.
And you know what I think is interesting, too, is it's regular people that are finding themselves addicted to this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll use my elderly father as an example, all right? A hip replacement. They give him opioids. And next thing I know, you know, a year into this thing, he's addicted. You know, also, and so, you know, that was a whole process, getting him off of that. It was bad. And as someone that's in recovery myself, I think it was even worse than what I went through. And then I remember being at the recovery center, you know, 6 years ago, and we had these group sessions, and the kid was telling a story, this young kid, about how he went to his heroin dealer. He went to do heroin for the first time, and he asked the dealer, he says, you know, I got to be home by 6 o'clock. How long will this last? Meaning, how long will the impact of this drug last? And the dealer said, for the rest of your life. So it's really across our whole society, right? They say one and done. And now we have a remedy for this to save lives. And John, you've shared with me personal stories where you talked about how it's $90 a dose right now. Sometimes these people, when they go down, they need more than one dose.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You could do 3, 4. Actually, state protocol, our normal dose was 2 milliliters, 1 milliliter in each nostril. State protocol's changed to now 4. So it's 2 and 2. I've actually been on ODs where we did one dose in the house, another dose in the back of the truck, and then the medics showed up and they did IV naloxone, which is Narcan. Mm-hmm. So that's 3 doses. And for us, that's 10 minutes from the farthest part of Glastonbury to Hartford Hospital. 10 minutes. There are other towns where you're talking 25, 30 minutes to a hospital. So you're going to go through a lot of Narcan. And Narcan metabolizes fast, and then you're high again.
What does that mean?
That means what the Narcan does is your cells have receptors built into them, mm-hmm, that the opioid attaches to and makes you high. The Narcan comes in and blocks it, basically ruins your high. You wake up and usually the headache, and maybe you get sick, maybe you want to fight. But anyway, that metabolizes, and that opioid is still floating around in your system, and it reattaches, and you're back in the same predicament.
So it only lasts so long. You know, I'm just curious, and I think a lot of our listeners might too be curious about this. And we're talking with John Ryan from Glastonbury EMS. What does it look like? How do you know when you're going on a call? When paramedics go on a call, how do you know that somebody hasn't just had too many beers? How do you know that it's...
That's actually interesting. That's one of the symptoms people recognize. It looks like they're acting drunk. But a lot of times the real key is pupils pinpoint. Tiny little pupils. That's usually a good sign of opioid. Difficulty breathing, starting to get kind of blue around their mouth. Their skin gets a little gray. Altered mental status. They just don't seem right. You start bagging them, and you give them the Narcan, and then they wake up because their family member found them.
Wow. And that's the other thing, too. You know, Kathy, I'm curious because I know a lot of folks who have loved ones that have addiction issues, and they actually keep the Narcan at home. I've talked to people who've actually saved their loved ones' lives because they have because they have Narcan. I mean, I don't think you would want to recommend that, but, you know, it beats the alternative of, you know, planning your kid's funeral.
We are recommending that family members and loved ones of people who with known opiate addictions are carrying Narcan, and actually brought up a really good point before, that includes the elderly population, and not even people who have a known opioid addiction, but sometimes with the elderly population, if they're prescribed pain medication and they forget that they took it, they might be more susceptible to an overdose, so they take a second dose of their medication, not recognizing that they already took one, and they can overdose rather quickly. So we are encouraging people to carry a Narcan. I think what's really important to note is if you misdiagnose somebody, if you think someone is having an opiate overdose and you give them Narcan and they aren't, there are no ill effects. So it really is risk-free. It's a win-win.
And that bill that the governor signed last year also protects you from that. If you in good conscience believe someone is having an opioid overdose and you administer Narcan, you can't be held criminally or civilly responsible if they weren't.
And how do you administer it?
Two ways. There's the standard way, which is a little syringe and a little vial. You screw the vial into the syringe, and then there's an atomizer that goes in there. You put it into the nostril. You push. That atomizes into one. You put it into the other side, and you push.
So it's like a nasal spray.
Yeah, like a nasal spray. And the other version, which paramedics do, or they do in the hospital, is they start an IV and give it in the arm.
Yeah, we actually see a third way, but it's very costly, which it's very similar to, very similar to some of the mechanisms with an EpiPen.
Oh, the auto-injector.
An auto-injector that'll talk to you. Say, press to your leg and depress in 3, 2, 1. Those are very expensive. We're talking hundreds of dollars.
Slower, much slower.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The intranasal is intranasal's fast. The IV is faster. But both of those require, you know, to have it. I mean, the regular Narcan intranasal, that's very widespread. You see that all over the place. The only problem, and we're not seeing it in Connecticut yet, but it's starting to happen, with the readily available status of Narcan, you're having Narcan parties. That's where people get together and they overdose on purpose because they know that all they got to do is make a phone call, Narcan shows up. That way they get Narcanned, or they call them Lazarus parties, bringing you back from the dead.
What the hell is going on? Unbelievable.
I was amazed when I read about that. We haven't had it here in Connecticut. There's no documented cases that I've read about.
Let's hope we don't. Let's hope we don't. But we've got a lot of other things to worry about. So let me ask you, Kathy, too, because you've got people that are out there in the field. You've got people that are trained in, you know, recovery, and you've got people that are trained in dealing with people in the community justice program and, you know, that are the homelessness issue and things like that. What's the reality as you have these meetings and you all come together on a regular basis at the Connection to talk about hot button issues and what's going on? What are some of the things that they're telling you that are evolving?
Well, particularly with the opioid epidemic, is that we're seeing fentanyl become more widespread. Fentanyl is it's very dangerous. You need very small amounts of fentanyl to overdose.
So is fentanyl the additive that they're adding to the heroin?
A lot of stuff. Dealers are cutting heroin, low-grade heroin, with fentanyl because fentanyl is 50 times more powerful than heroin.
And it gives you the same high?
Oh, worse, yeah. It's stronger, a lot stronger.
And how long does that high last?
I mean, I've picked up people who do 9-10 bags at a time of heroin.
I just can't imagine. And I have so many questions about it. Like, you know, how do you do it? What does it feel like? I mean, it's mind-boggling to me, but it's a reality because, again, like anything else, it's an addiction. It's an addiction.
That's right. And I think one of the things, you know, John's benefit is these folks are medically trained, and our staff aren't necessarily medically trained. So we spend a lot of time working with them on Narcan administration. We also use the nasal mist. And so you have to put that together. So obviously we're not necessarily trained to work in a crisis-like situation that's medical in nature. So we try to simulate that and have our staff repeatedly put this together so that while they're experiencing an overdose, they are not now trying to figure out how to get the Narcan together because the last time they did it was when they were trained 3 months ago.
And you do that. You do that over at Glastonbury EMS.
Absolutely.
You know, this is one of those things. Maybe there's a reason that you two came together because I know that they do that for community members, right?
Oh, yeah.
They have a training room where they'll bring in folks folks on everything from CPR to Narcan administration, because that's a really good point. You know, if you haven't done it and all of a sudden you're faced in that with that situation, you want to at least feel like you've had some sort of practice or comfort level of putting the elements together.
We have staff who are administering Narcan. You mentioned that we're also out in the community at locations. We have staff bringing Narcan into the community because, again, timeliness is a factor in reversing an overdose. Part of the problem when the opiate binds to the receptors in the brain is it sort of blocks out oxygen. And that's what happens. There's a decrease in breathing, and that's when you get in real trouble with your overdose. And so if we have oxygen-deprived brains for a period of time, it could be catastrophic. Mm-hmm. And so we are having our staff bring Narcan, and obviously our protocol is to call 911 immediately because we know people, Narcan can last 30 to 90 minutes, something like that. We know that people can re-overdose if the Narcan wears off and they have a certain amount of opiate in their system. So we're training our folks, and unfortunately we're having to, fortunately that we're able to save lives, but unfortunately we're having to use Narcan in our facilities.
By the time they get to the hospital, they're fine. They get out of the back of the truck and they just walk away. So you tell them, you tell the ED that, you know, what happened, and then they go looking for them because in 30 minutes they're going to find them laying on the side of the road somewhere.
Wow.
Because they've overdosed again.
We talk a lot on this program about stereotypes, John. And, you know, as an EMT, and, you know, John's also a very good professional photographer. I mean, that's his day job, right?
That's my day job.
That's your day job. You know, but in your EMT role, what are some of the things that you've seen that where you just shake your head? Because, again, back to the stereotype thing. These aren't people just out there living on the streets that are overdosing, right? Who are you seeing? Are you seeing the housewives, the kids?
Beautiful house. South part of town, the biggest marble foyer I've ever seen in my life. Went upstairs and, you know, we had to administer Narcan to a 22-year-old girl who obviously had everything she ever wanted. Now, fortunately, it had a good outcome that time. I haven't seen her since. I'm hoping it had a better outcome, but you never know. I mean, I went on one case where we found a patient, or, well, not really a patient anymore, but she had been dead probably for 3 days. She died standing up and fell over face first into her bed. She was standing from the waist up. Well, you're standing in kind of at a 90-degree angle. Mm-hmm. And that's how we found her.
So what are some of the resources and some of the things, Kathy, that at the Connection you kind of push people towards? So we've talked about, you know, these examples of the horrifying effects of these opioids and then the Narcan. So what happens after the Narcan? What's the next steps that you recommend to people? Okay, so you're lucky, we had Narcan, you're alive again, now what?
Well, treatment obviously is a critical component. You know, Narcan is solving the crisis at the medical crisis at the moment.
At the moment. It's a temporary fix.
It's a temporary fix, and one that we're fortunate to have to save people's lives. And then we want to get people into treatment. We want to figure out what the appropriate level of care would be for that person through assessment. We want to look at their family, talk to their family. You know, oftentimes we'll treat someone and then they return back to their family. Well, some of those same dynamics might be going on, and other people need to change things as well to help this person. We also, at our treatment facilities, have a lot of family education to work on some of those particular issues that might plague that family therapy. And then we do, again, train the family in Narcan administration.
You know, not I can say myself as someone who's in recovery, you know, had I just gone to detox and a rehab and then just jumped right back into my environment, and right back to my triggers and right back to my same old friends and the same old crap, you know, I wouldn't have been successful. Or my chances of being successful would have been a hell of a lot less. So it's like with anything else. So you got to change, you know, sometimes people, places, and things. You can't go back to the same old, and that's hard sometimes. And, you know, I'm dealing with a gal right now whose daughter is having opioid addiction. She says, well, you know, she relapsed again, but I think it's because of her mental illness. She keeps making excuses for her daughter. And as someone in recovery myself, I had to stop it. I said, you know what? She's never going to have the level of success until you, her mother, quit making excuses for her, because she's got an out. You know, she keeps giving her an out. Well, maybe it'll take next time. And that's the other component. Sometimes it does take, you know, you can always start over. It can take sometimes multiple times to get back on the wagon, or, you know, get yourself straight. But you got to keep trying. You're right. You got to plant the seed. That's what you got to do, or it's never going to happen.
Absolutely. You know, recovery is not completely linear. It's not that if someone moves forward that they can't move backwards. Right. And I think what you, something you brought up is really important. We know that many people struggle with co-occurring issues, yeah. that they do struggle with mental health and substance use disorders. And sometimes there are symptoms of their mental illness that does trigger use, and vice versa. And so we want to make sure that we are treating people wholly. And so we at The Connection are doing lots of co-occurring recovery treatment, where we're not just looking at the substance use disorder and the family component, we're also looking at the mental illness and how those two issues play into one another, so that we can try to address both issues simultaneously.
You know, we should mention, this is a good opportunity to mention, if you want more information on the resources that are offered by The Connection, the website is theconnectioninc.org. That's theconnectioninc.org, and they also have a toll-free helpline, and that number is 855-435-7955. That's 855-435-7955. You know, John, one of the things is, you know, you're John Ryan, you're a straight shooter, you're a pretty normal guy.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, do you ever just go out on a call, and do you ever just see some of the reality of what's happening in our society and shake your head? But you've been doing this a long time. You know, I mean, right now it's opioids. You know, it must have been something else 10 years ago, and it'll be something else 10 years from now.
Oh, I remember when I was a little kid in school, they were talking about the heroin epidemic when I was in school. And that was back in the 60s and 70s. And now it's back again. Well, maybe it never left. Maybe it just has gotten worse again. Maybe because we have much more access to information, maybe we're actually seeing what it's always been. I don't know. But yeah, I shake my head all the time. My coworkers, they hear it all the time from me. You can't predict stupid, but you can count on it. And I can't even say that too much anymore, because I have no way to comprehend the way this stuff works. I mean, you see people who are using this, and there's no good reason in my mind why, but it's not my mind to worry about. It's what's why they did it.
Right.
You do the best you can with them.
Well, and I think that's one of the, you know, I hear that all the time too. Let's just, you know, take alcoholism. Well, what's the problem? You know, put down the drink and you won't have the problem. You know, but there are diseases, there are That's mitigating right. factors. You know, with my alcoholism, you know, I wasn't abused as a child. I didn't have trauma in my early childhood. Those things didn't happen to me. So everybody's different. And that's why organizations like The Connection are so imperative, because you've got different programs with different niches and training for people that can address people's individual needs, meet them where they're at.
2 weeks ago, I did a mental health first aid class that was put on by Hartford Hospital, the Institute of Living. A wonderful class. There was a guy there who runs a program, and one of his clients had gone through rehab 100 times, literally 100 times.
How much time has he got now?
I don't know. I didn't ask, but you figure 100 times. I have no idea how long rehab takes, but that's got to be a couple of years.
Insurance will only, in some cases, very rarely even pay for 28 days. And then if you're private pay, you're looking at about probably $20,000 and $30,000 a shot times 100. Do the math. I can't. But you know, good for them. Yeah. You know, if it takes, but the resources are the resources, and also having the family and everybody, whoever it is that's your support system around you, also understanding the issue. And talk to these people without blame or judgment, because sometimes it's not their fault, you know? And if you're one of those people that don't have these issues, it's harder, I think, to understand. I know my eyes are opened up a lot more. The stereotypes that I had, you know, these preconceived notions that I had, are a hell of a lot different today than they used to be. But I put a face and a voice on my recovery, so I can tell people that are out there that are listening that, you know what, it's okay. It's okay to ask for help. And you know, do that before you need Narcan and before you need these resources. Just, there's people out there that you can go to, that you can support. You've got 211, which is also a great resource. If you can't remember the phone number of The Connection, then you can call 211. And that is kind of a central location, because I'd rather have you calling 211 the 911.
Every time, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Kathleen Savino, Chief Program Officer, for the connection, and John Ryan, just a great guy who just, I just love how you make sense out of everything that we talk about. And I'm sure that our listeners enjoyed this conversation as well. And we thank you, our listeners, for tuning in to this edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.